The following is a brahmachari class given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on January 13th, 2015 in Los Angeles, USA.
So tonight we're going to talk about the joys of brahmachari life, the ecstasy of being a brahmachari. So what is a brahmachari? A brahmachari is one, Prabhupada says, who only uses sex for producing Krishna-conscious children. That is a brahmachari, you see. So, how does one become a brahmachari, and how does one maintain brahmacharya throughout one's life? For this, we have to go to the Bhagavad Gita. Vishayavini vartante niraharashidehina rashavarshang rashopyashva prajang vishwanivartate. The embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains. But seeking such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. So all you really have to do is you have to taste something better than sex. That's all you got to really do. In the material world, sex is number one. Millions and billions of dollars are made by selling sex in various ways. There's prostitutes, there's toothpaste. I remember the old ad. When I was a kid, it was new ultra bright toothpaste gives your mouth sex appeal. So sex makes millions and billions of dollars because everybody thinks, yeah, sex. You see? Look at all the, you know, all the rock and roll songs, all the pop songs, all about, you know, sex love, the love based on sex attraction. So how do you get beyond all that? You have to realize there's something better than sex, and that is Krishna. Krishna is better than sex. If you can experience Krishna, that's better than sex. So all you have to do to be a happy, fixed-up brahmachari is you have to learn how to taste Krishna at every minute, how you can relish Krishna at every minute. So how much nectar is there in those two little syllables? Just two teeny little syllables, Krishna. How much nectar is there? Well, Rupa Goswami has answered that question for us. Tunde tandamani vitang vitinate tundavali lamdeye karna kradaka dammani gatyate kanarvide braspiham chetrpangana sangani vijayate sarvendriyanam kritim no jani janita kriyadvir amritai krishneti varnadvai. I do not know how much nectar these two syllables Krishna have produced. Because when I vibrate Krishna, Krishna is literally dancing on my tongue, oozing out so much nectar that my little tiny mouth it can hardly hold any of that nectar. So I need to have millions of mouths. Actually, after the lecture, I'm going to sing a few songs I've written in English. And I've written this, I've taken this prayer of Rupa Goswami and made an English song out of it. So you'll be hearing the song a little later at the end of the lecture. So anyway, then he goes on to continue. He says, and when these syllables, Krishna, enter the holes of my ears, oh, there's so much nectar. What my two ears can hold, I need billions and trillions of ears to capture that nectar. And when Krishna dances in the courtyard of my heart, my mind is totally conquered, and I'm stunned, I'm paralyzed in transcendental ecstasy. Now compare this with Bhagavad Gita chapter 6, talking about the yogi who's trying to control his mind. Yato yato nishchalati manas chanchalamastaram tatastata nayanyata datmanyivanasham niyam. From wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. Does it sound like Rupa Goswami is having that kind of a problem to wrestle with? No. The yogi is trying to mechanically control his mind. If that's all you're doing in your practice of sadhana, you're not a devotee yet. You're acting like a yogi. Don't be like a yogi, just trying to, you know, keep your mind fixed. That's all right, but I'm saying you got to go to the higher level. If you really want to get the taste, you got to go to the higher level where you fall in love with the name Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. You have to fall in love with the name. Instead of falling in love with a girl or a boy, fall in love with the name. Because a girl or a boy will disappoint you in due course of time. But the name will never disappoint you, you see. You got to fall in love with the name Krishna. Even if you're married, you'll see that marriage doesn't fully satisfy you. We have nothing against marriage for those who want to get married. That's all right. But that's not going to satisfy you anyway. The only thing that's actually going to satisfy you is when you develop love for Krishna. So why not work on it right now? Even if you're going to be married later on in your life, that's all right. But focus right now on what's really going to satisfy you. And that is Krishna, Krishna, that transcendental vibration who is Supreme Personality of God Himself. Therefore, it is called Nam Avatar. You see, Krishna has personally come. He's present. He's fully present in His name. The only difficulty is we're so dull, we're so lusty, we're so angry, we're so greedy, we're so maddened, we're so illusioned, and we're so envious, we just can't recognize that God Himself has come. It's a big problem. As they say in the Dhanasana the Buddha, problema grande, a very big problem, you see. Very big problem. So, how do you get beyond that problem? You need a guru, a spiritual master. You need devotee association. You need scriptures, you see. If you take the help of the scriptures, the Vaishnavas, and the spiritual master, then you become to the point where you can actually start to taste the name. You can relish the nectar of the name. And when that relish comes, all the material desires will just go away, because it doesn't. They can't compete with the name. Once you actually get a taste for the name, there's no competition for material desires anymore. They can't get close to the satisfaction the name gives you. So somehow we have to get a taste for the name. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he begs for that day. Kabbe habbe bolo seidi namar. When, oh, when will that day be mine? Aparada guchi, shudaname ruchi, kripa bole habe hridoye sanchar. When my offenses ceasing, taste for the name increasing, when in my heart will your mercy shine? Kabe habe bolo seidi namar. When, oh, when will that day be mine? So it's simple. All you got to do is hanker. All you have to do is hanker. For when will that day come when I can actually get free of all these offenses I'm committing in my mind, in my mouth, in my activities? When can I finally get all these offenses out of the way so I can really relish the name? You see? So even right now, here we are in the offensive stage, or trying to get out of the offensive stage into the clearing stage. But if you have that burning desire, I have to become pure devotee. I can't remain in this position of a lusty dog. You see? I can't remain in this lusty dog position. I have to become the pure devotee. You see? Then Krishna will reciprocate. According to the degree of the intensity of your desire, Krishna will reciprocate with you. Krishna is right there within your heart. He knows you better than you know yourself, a million times better than you know yourself. You see? And He's your ever-wishing friend. He's on your side. You have your best friend right there within your heart, Lord Krishna Himself. He's your very best friend. He's trying to help you get out of this material existence. We just have to cooperate with him. That's all we have to do. Simply, we have to cooperate with Krishna. And then everything will come. Right now, we're fighting with Krishna. We're holding on to our material desires, fighting. No, Krishna. No, no, no. You see? I want to remain an enjoyer of this material world. Stop fighting with Krishna. Give in to, all right, Krishna. Now I will give up my fight. I surrender to you. Please engage me in your service. Whatever you want, I'm prepared to do whatever you want for all of eternity. Just please guide me how I can serve you. Give me a spiritual master who can guide me or bless me. I can follow my spiritual master, your representative, with complete faith and devotion. In this way, you see, by completely giving up one's war of independence, which is a foolish war to fight, you can never become independent from Krishna. But we fight this war of independence foolishly. Giving up this war of independence, surrendering to Krishna, then everything will come. All beautiful, wonderful, auspicious things will come. Will be blessed unlimitedly, and all the anxiety that we once had will simply be a memory of what it was like before I surrendered to Krishna. Thank God I surrendered to Krishna and got out of that nightmare I was living in. So, perhaps there's some questions. Yes?
You were telling the other night about Sankirtan Japa.
Yes.
Could you tell us more about that?
Yes. I was mentioning to him the Bhakta Storm. I was talking this morning about Prabhupada's quote, or maybe it was yesterday, Prabhupada's quote from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that when a devotee becomes an offenseless chanter of the holy names, he becomes Jagad Guru, and then by his influence the whole world will take up the chanting of Hare Krishna. So the point is this: one of the most potent preaching things you can do is simply become pure. You see, if you will cultivate your own purity, that whatever degree of purity you have cultivated within your heart by chanting, by service, all the activities that are a manifestation or reflection of purity, that whatever degree of purity you have manifested by your sincere endeavors to please Krishna and your spiritual master, that will act as an uplifting, having an uplifting impact on the global consciousness. So, in this way, even while chanting your japa, by intensely striving for purity, you actually have an impacting influence, and an uplifting impact, I mean to say, on the whole universe. So therefore, chant your japa compassionately for your benefit and for the benefit of all living entities. So you could call that Sankirtan japa, you see. Understanding it's not only for my benefit, but it's for the benefit of all the living entities throughout the whole material existence. Any other questions?
Isn't it as the chanting audibly is for the benefit of all the living entities around us?
Audible chanting is very, very good. That is especially, of course, japa primarily meant for oneself, but my point is even japa has an impact.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
So what to speak if you chant, if you go out and stand and dance on the streets, or you know, even in the temple room, when you're vibrating in kirtan, loud kirtan, that then becomes even more powerful. And if you do it in a congregation of devotees, the synergetic effect of two devotees chanting together, 500 devotees chanting together, that has even a more powerful impact on the global consciousness. So one should chant very good japa and also really dive into the kirtan. When there's a kirtan going, and just dive in completely, you know. I said, just imagine this, okay? Just imagine that there's a Vaikuntha airplane that lands here out here in the grass. And the messengers on the airplane, They've been instructed. Anybody who totally dives into kirtan, they're invited on the ship to go to Goloka immediately. Those who are totally into the kirtan, they put their whole heart and soul in the kirtan. Yeah, sometimes I'd see in kirtan, like I was in Toronto leading the kirtan at the Sunday feast. Some people were chanting, really into it. Some people were sitting there, not even chanting, just sitting there. In the middle of the kirtan, just sitting there. You see? And I even noticed somebody here this morning doing it in the LA temple. During Jairada Madhavina, just sitting there. So, thing is, just imagine if the Vaikuntha airplane landed and anybody who was really into the kirtan, like, Hare Krishna, they're on the plane and they get to go today, right now, to Goloka Vrindavan. Would you want to miss out on the Goloka airplane because you weren't into the kirtan? Your mind was spacing out. You were thinking about when's Prashadam and when can I get married and see what I'm saying? So when there's a kirtan, dive into it because you're qualifying yourself for Goloka Vrindavan when you do that. Dive completely into it. And you know what? You don't need the Vaikuntha airplane. You know why? It's already come. It's already here. The airplane is already here. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. If you go deep enough into this chanting, the spiritual world will be, you'll see you're already in the spiritual world. You're already in the spiritual world. If you go deep in the chanting, you can see, it was actually Krishna will reveal himself to you. You'll see him directly, yeah. Ooh, that's not good. You can actually Balanga playing is nice, but you must chant along with it. Where's the water? A bottle or something? Some water. Okay. Any other questions? Yeah.
What are some things to take into consideration when seeking initiation?
Prabhupada says, as soon as you are serious about self-realization, you should get initiated immediately. Some devotees are waiting 15, 20 years to get initiated in our movement. But Prabhupada says, right in there in the treasurement, you get initiated immediately, Prabhupada says. Immediately. That's one thing. You're supposed to get initiated immediately, Prabhupada says. Because, you know, how long? I can live, I can die at any minute. It's a very urgent thing. I need a spiritual master. So Prabhupada actually says, it's right there. You should get initiated immediately. Of course, you have to make sure the guru is bona fide. You don't want to get initiated by a rascal, of course. You also, at the same time, you got to take time to make sure he's bona fide. He's not some charlatan character, a slick talker who's not really following the principle, you know. You need to take some time and make sure you have a genuine spiritual master. But once you actually find a bona fide spiritual master, the injunction is get initiated immediately. According to Prabhupada. That's one consideration. Other considerations?
Like if you have several bona fide choices.
Oh, the real thing is if you're serious, you see, some devotees say, well, I can't make up my mind. You know, there's so many gurus in ISKCON, I can't make up my mind. Well, you know what? You're not really serious yet. That's your excuse. Because as soon as you're really serious, Krishna will immediately show you. Teshang satata yuktanang bhajatam pratipuravakam. You see. To those who are constantly devoted and give me and worship me with love, I give them the understanding of who their guru should be. You see what I'm saying? If you haven't made up, you're flipping about it, well, this one and that one, this one and that, means you're not really serious at the fully submitted to Krishna. You're not. You're still playing around with Maya in your mind about being independent. But when you're really serious, that now, my Krishna, I'm ready to fully surrender. You kindly reveal to me my spiritual master, and you'll see, oh yeah, there he is. Immediately you'll see. But you got to be absolutely serious. There'll be no question. Yeah.
What if there's a case where you want to surrender to somebody who could be a bona fide spiritual master, but they aren't taking disciples.
Huh.
Something that you're really inspired from.
Yeah.
And you've even...
Well, you have one or two choices. You could wait, or you could... Or you could ask him. I'm totally inspired by you, and I'd like to be a disciple, but you're not initiated. And so you tell me who should I get initiated by.
Oh.
If he's your siksha guru, and you're willing to fully do what he says, and just say, okay, you tell me where I should get initiated. I've surrendered unto you. You're my siksha guru. You tell me where to get initiated.
That's good.
You know, I asked that to my siksha guru, and he told me that. He said he didn't really feel like anyone, you know, that he could really, or at least he couldn't personally recommend anybody else because he hadn't personally taken initiation from them.
It was easy in the old days because we just had Prabhupada, you know. That was now this kind of big shopping mall, you know. About 200 shops in the mall, you know. Maybe 200 or 300 now, I don't know. It's quite a thing. But I still say, if you're really really, really serious to fully give yourself to Krishna. Krishna revealed to you, it's not going to be a problem.
So 1 to 10 in his Bhagavad Gita, Tadvidipranipatena, you go and inquire from the spiritual master and who can answer all your questions. That is also one way to
get. Yeah, you can see who is willing to answer all of my questions. That's another way of saying it. You see. Some gurus are so big you can't even... You might get one question in your whole life. They have so many disciples. You can't write them an email. Even godbrothers can't write them emails. They have so many thousands and thousands of disciples. Some may not be practical. Some devotees are very happy. They just because they're inspired by his lectures, and they don't care if they ever get to directly answer him a question or not. Maybe one of his counselors. They're happy. Some devotees are satisfied. So that's fine. So you have to decide what you're looking for also. Do you want a spiritual master who can answer all your questions, or you just want somebody whose lectures inspire you, or you'd like to have somebody that does both? So you can also study in a very practical, common sense way also. What would you really like to have in a spiritual master? And who can best satisfy your particular needs? That's another way of doing it.
What about like in terms of service? Is it conducive to find somebody who's sort of doing something?
That you can personally serve them?
Or, just somebody who's doing a kind of service that you feel inspired by.
Yeah, you could do that. You have a choice. So if you're really into book distribution and you have a spiritual master that's really doing it, you could do that. Or if somebody's in the, you could do that. If somebody has a certain style of preaching that you feel that's your style as well, you can certainly do that. It's your choice. Have fun with it.
Srila Gurudev, for a bhakta, for an aspiring initiate, what would you say is the most important quality for one to develop as a prerequisite?
Hearing. He hears well. He's very eager to hear. When there's an opportunity to hear, he's always there. He's hearing, 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 hearing. That's the number one qualification for a disciple, to have them. He's very eager to hear from the spiritual master. Very, very eager to hear.
Would you say that it's equally as important, Gurudev, to not only hear, but to also follow?
If he's not eager to hear, he won't follow. He's eager to hear him. If he's very eager to hear the spiritual master, every chance he can, he'll naturally follow. Obedience follows hearing like a shadow. Those who hear well, who totally submit themselves to hearing the spiritual master, they will naturally be very obedient, and they're very much into following him also. It'll happen naturally. So the key is, if you just focus on hearing, 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 everything comes with it.
What about in terms of, I guess, a person's sort of understanding about sort of the details of devotional service, you know, like, must one have exactly the same opinion on everything as the spiritual master has? Or is there some scope for having, like, you know, different perspectives on things?
The disciple naturally will go with the opinion of the spiritual master. Mm-hmm. Naturally. He won't have a difference of opinion. His opinion will be very, will line up with the spiritual master. Naturally he will line up with the spiritual master's opinion, because he's a follower of his spiritual master in every possible way. His thoughts, his words, his deeds, in every way he wants to follow his spiritual master. If someone disagrees with the spiritual master, not very conducive for being a surrendered disciple. Well, I think you're wrong, Guru Maharaj. I think it's like this. What kind of disciple is that?
What if, you know, sometimes they say Shiksha Guru is, you know, equal to, if not even more important sometimes than Diksha Guru.
Well, you know what? If you look, you can read in Prabhupada's, in the Veda base, Prabhupada says clearly, and we got this letter in Austin, actually. We were there when the letter came from Prabhupada. He said, actually, you only have one guru, and that's your Diksha Guru. But others who instruct you in the same way, others who reinforce your relationship with your Diksha Guru, they can also be taken as gurus. So there's only one, you only have one spiritual master, and that's your Diksha Guru. Prabhupada says there's only one real guru, and that's the Diksha Guru. Prabhupada says it. Of course, other places it says both are equal, but you have to understand what is the meaning of Siksha Guru. He is one who fully who reinforces your relationship with your Diksha Guru. It's not some other opinions. Who fully inspires you and helps you to connect with your Diksha Guru. Not without any, not fully, 100% routes you to your Diksha Guru. He's Siksha.
Well, how could we understand then, like, if apparently it seems that there's different opinions within ISKCON, but if, you know, if people are, you know, these should all be...
Well, yeah, for example, what's in a different example of differences of opinion?
I don't know, like, maybe what we were talking about before, you know, there's some people are very keen on, you know, like the milk thing, for instance, boycotting milk products, you know, others are more tolerant of that, you know, so it seems like, you know, there's a difference of opinion.
Yeah, but I go with Prabhupada, I don't go with opinions, I don't go with Vox Populi, I don't go with popular opinions, I go with Prabhupada and says that's them. To me, there's no confusion. It's very clear. If you read the books clearly, have you read all the books?
Not all of them.
Practically no one has read all the books. That's one of our big problems in this movement. Practically nobody has read all the Prabhupada books. He said, all of my followers have to read all my books. Practically no one has done that. That's why we have all these different opinions. Because they're not reading Prabhupada's books thoroughly. Anybody who reads Prabhupada's books, they get all of his books, they'll get a very clear picture. What Prabhupada wants. It's very clear. Prabhupada clearly states that milk is required to develop finer brain tissues for Vedic understanding. We need it. He personally drank it from the commercial dairies. Even devotees were getting a huge quantity of milk products donated from a dairy to the temple. Prabhupada said, very good. And they want to say, oh, very bad. Prabhupada must have been wrong. He just wasn't aware of the slaughterhouse, what's going on in the slaughter. I mean, come on. What kind of nonsense is that? Prabhupada just wasn't aware that, you know, it's not cool to do this because it was supporting the cow industry, cow slaughter industry. Is Prabhupada stupid? Prabhupada knew that we need milk products to develop the finer brain tissue. It stated again and again. All I can say is they're not reading the books. But, you know, I don't make a big issue out of it. I train those who want to follow me, what is Prabhupada actually saying, but I don't argue with those who have that opinion. I just say, well, Obviously, your brain is so developed you don't need milk products. But I need them because I don't have a big, my brain as developed as yours. You know, I take a humble position. You know, I don't fight over it. But I just take a humble position. Obviously, Prabhu, your brain is so advanced and your brain tissues are so finely developed, you don't need milk. But I'm just a struggling neophyte and I need all the milk I can get to develop my brain tissues. I'm a stupid dullard and I need that milk to get my brain tissues nourished. You obviously are a genius. You don't need it, but I do. I take a humble position. I wouldn't argue with them. But if you ask me, I'm going to go there. I'm going to like yell out in their lecture, you know, you're a stupid. You're against calc. You know, I would raise a question. I don't make any big controversies out of it. Actually, I've never had to, but somebody challenged me one time in a Sunday feast. They started yelling at me in the Sunday feast about this issue. And then they apologized later on, actually, to me. And it happened in Sydney, Australia, the Sunday feast. Remember that? He started like making a big thing. Because his guru was a vegan, you know. He really was getting hot and heavy on me in the middle of the Sunday feast lecture. But he realized it was a mistake. So, you know, I take a humble position in terms of one-on-one. But if you ask me philosophically, it's very clearly stated. And here's how to justify it. I had a nice talk with Giri Rajaswami about it a couple of years ago here in New Dwarka, over in Balaram's apartment. We had a nice long talk about it. See, the thing is, if you're in Vrindavan and you're going on Govardhan Parikrama and you get a thorn in your foot and you left your tweezers back of the ashram, what are you going to do? You're going to take a thorn to get out of the thorn, right? So, cow slaughter, cow abuse is a big thorn in the social body's side. So, can you use that thorn to pick out the thorn? Yes, you can. You can drink that milk to develop the finer brain tissues for Vedic understanding and how to take over the world for Srila Prabhupada. You see? I'm serious. We're not just a little religious group here, you know, chanting Hare Krishna. We have a vision how to take over this whole world, how to become the leaders, the how to influence all the leaders of this planet to take to Vaishnavism. All the high court judges wearing tilak, you see. We have a very big vision of taking over the world for Prabhupada, and we need the milk to help us understand how to do that. Therefore, I'm in favor of milk. When I took a yogurt at breakfast this morning, Bhrigupati Prabhu went, you questioned me, you're taking yogurt? And I told him yes, and I told him why. And he appreciated what I said. So I'm ready for some hot milk for Sharm tonight. Prabhupada told us. Prabhupada trained us to take hot milk every night. That was the standard in ISKCON. Every ISKCON temple, every night, everyone took hot milk in Krishna book. That was the evening thing. Hot milk and Krishna book was the standard in every ISKCON temple. But as far as the vegans go, I say it's a blessing because they're pushing us to get our own cow protection thing together, and I appreciate their push. Because I want them to drink milk too. Because they need, we all need it. So for their sake, at least, of course for our sake as well, but I'm grateful for those who are pushing veganism because they're pushing us to get our cow protection programs together in every temple of the ISKCON world. So I don't have a fighting mood. I appreciate how they're helping this movement to help. They're pushing us to get our cow protection program together. So I appreciate our vegan devotees. I don't have anything against them. I appreciate them. But I don't follow them because they're wrong. Yes.
Isn't it also proof that everything we cook, we're cooking to please Krishna, and everything that Krishna likes has milk products involved?
Krishna wants milk. It's a fact. We have to offer him the milk. It's our duty.
Yes.
We have to offer milk sweets to the deities. It's our duty. Prabhupada explained deity worship means milk sweets. So what are you going to do if you don't have a cow protection program? You know, the deities go without milk? The fact is, the cows who give that milk, they're greatly blessed. Any cow whose milk is you offered to Rukmini Dwarkadish, that cow's really blessed. Good point. Okay, anything else? What we can do, I thought I was going to do a few songs. I was kind of encouraged to do that. So bring that guitar over here. I'll do a few songs now.